Chapter 3. Hera and her rivals. Io. One day, Hera looked out over the world and saw it suddenly grow dark. She immediately suspected that her husband had created a cloud to hide something. She brushed away the cloud and saw Zeus on the bank of a river. A beautiful cow stood near him. Hera thought the cow was a disguise for a beautiful water nymph. She was right because the cow was actually Io, the daughter of the river god Nokis. Zeus had been flirting with Io. When he sensed the approach of his wife, he changed Io into a cow. Hera joined her husband and, noticing the cow, praised its beauty. She asked whose it was. Zeus said he had just created it from the earth. Hera asked to have the cow as a gift. Without arousing Hera's suspicion, he agreed. Hera told Argus to watch the cow day and night. Argus had 100 eyes in his head and never went to sleep with more than 2 closed at a time. He watched her feed during the day, and at night he tied her up with a rope around her neck. One day, Io saw her father and her sisters, and she went near them. She desperately wanted to tell him that she was his daughter, but she could not speak. Then she had the idea to write her name in the sand with her foot. Inachus recognized it and realized that this cow was his daughter, for whom he had been searching. He hugged her neck and cried, "Alas, my daughter, it would have been better if you had died." While Inachus wept, Argus came and drove him away. Then he took a seat on a high rock from where he could see all around in every direction. Zeus was troubled by the sufferings of his mistress. He called Hermes and told him to go and kill Argus. Hermes quickly put his winged sandals on his feet and took his magical wand, which could make a person fall asleep. As soon as Hermes jumped down to earth, he stole several sheep and went to find Argus. He played on some reed pipes and pretended to be a shepherd. As he approached, Argus listened with delight, for he had never seen the instrument before. "Young man," said Argus, "come and take a seat by me on this stone. There is no better place for your flocks to graze than here." Hermes sat down, talked, and told stories until late. He played his most gentle music on his pipes, hoping to put Argus to sleep. Finally, Argus's eyes were all asleep. As the monster's head nodded forward on his chest, Hermes drew his sword and cut through Argus's neck. At that moment, Hermes felt that Hera was coming, so he fled. When Hera saw Argus's severed head, she took out his eyes angrily and put them on the tail of a peacock. They remain there to this day. In her anger, Hera sent a biting fly to torment Io. The poor nymph fled over the entire world trying to escape from this insect. Zeus pleaded with Hera to leave Io alone. He promised not to pay Io any more attention. Finally, Hera agreed to allow Zeus to return Io to her former self. The coarse hairs fell from Io's body. Her horns shrank, and her mouth grew shorter. At last, there was nothing left of the cow except her beauty. She reunited with her father and sisters, never to see Zeus again. Hera and her rivals. Callisto. Callisto was another maiden who attracted the wandering eye of Zeus. She felt the wrath of a jealous Hera when the goddess changed her into a bear.
"I will take away,"
said Hera,
"that beauty with which you have attracted my husband."
Callisto tried to stretch out her arms to beg Hera to stop. Her arms were already covered with black hair. Her hands grew round and became armed with crooked claws. Her voice became a terrifying growl. The only things that remained unchanged were Callisto's personality and her memories. One day, Callisto's son, Arcas, saw her as he was hunting. She also saw him and recognized him as her own son, now a young man. As she approached, Arcas became alarmed and raised his hunting spear. He was trying to kill her when Zeus saw this and changed Arcas into a smaller bear. Then he picked both of them up and placed them among the stars in heaven. There they became the constellations known as the Great and Little Bear. Hera was furious to see her rival put in such an honorable position. She complained to her brother Poseidon, saying,
"Do you ask why I, the queen of the gods, have left the heavens to come to your palace under the waves? You should know that my place in heaven has been given to another. You will hardly believe me, but look when night darkens the world. You will see the two of whom I have complained honored in the heavens. They are in the northernmost section of the sky. Why should any mortal now worry about offending me, when they can see what rewards there are for causing my displeasure? I punished her, and then she is placed among the stars. Perhaps Zeus plans to marry her and put me away. But you, my older brother, if you have sympathy for me and do not agree with the dishonor shown to me, I beg you to show it. Forbid this couple from coming into your waters, as all the other stars do. Then all will know that these two deserve no honor."
Poseidon agreed, and therefore, the two constellations of the Great and Little Bear move round and round in heaven, but never sink, as the other stars do beneath the ocean. Apollo and Daphne. Daphne was Apollo's first love. It was not brought about by accident, but by the vengeance of Eros. One day, Apollo saw Eros playing with his bow and magical arrows. Apollo said to him, "Why do you play with such powerful weapons, little boy? Leave those for men who are worthy to use them. I myself have recently killed a terrible beast with my arrows. Be happy with your torch, child, and play with that, but do not think you are worthy to play with my weapons." Eros replied,
"Your arrows may conquer anything in this world, Apollo, but mine shall conquer your heart."
As he said this, he chose two arrows of different workmanship, one to cause love, the other to repel love. The first was of gold, the second was of lead. With the leaden arrow, he struck the nymph Daphne, the daughter of the river god Peneus. With the golden one, Eros shot Apollo through the heart. Daphne delighted in woodland sports and in hunting wild animals. Many suitors wanted to marry her, but she ignored them all because of Eros's arrow. Her father often said to her,
"Daughter, you owe me a son-in-law. You owe me grandchildren."
Daphne would throw her arms around her father's neck and say,
"Dearest father, please allow me always to remain unmarried, like the goddess Artemis."
Finally, Peneus gave his permission for Daphne to remain single. However, at the same time he said, "Your own beauty will cause you to be married someday." When Eros's arrow struck Apollo, the god immediately fell in love with Daphne. He longed to make her his wife. To him, her eyes were as bright as stars. He saw her lips and was not satisfied with only seeing them. He admired her hands and arms, naked to the shoulder. He followed her in the woods, and she fled from him, swifter than the wind. "Stay," begged Apollo. "Daughter of Peneus, I am not a foe. Do not run from me as a lamb runs from the wolf. It is for love I pursue you. You make me miserable with fear that you might fall and hurt yourself on these stones, and I should be the cause. Please run slower, and I will follow slower." Daphne continued to run and ignored what he said. But even as she fled, she charmed him. The wind blew her garments, and her unbound hair streamed loose behind her. Sped by Eros's magic, Apollo ran after her. In this fashion, Apollo and Daphne ran through the woods. He ran for love, while she ran for fear. Apollo was faster, and he slowly closed the distance between them. Daphne's strength began to fail. She knew she was about to fall down, so she called upon her father.
"Help me, Peneus! Open the earth to swallow me, or change my form, which has caused me to come into this danger."
As soon as Daphne spoke, a stiffness came into all of her limbs. Her chest was enclosed in tender bark. Her hair became leaves, and her arms became branches. Daphne's feet were suddenly stuck fast in the ground as roots. Her face became a treetop, but it still retained its beauty. Apollo stood amazed. He touched the trunk and felt the flesh tremble under the new bark. He embraced the branches and kissed the wood. The branches shrank from his lips. "Since you cannot be my wife," said Apollo, "you shall certainly be my tree. I will wear you for my crown, and I will decorate my harp and my quiver with you." When the great Roman conquerors lead victory parades in their capital, they shall also wear you as their crowns. And as eternal youth is mine, you also will always be green, and your leaves will never grow old. Daphne, now changed into a laurel tree, bowed her head in grateful acknowledgement.